Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We apologize for actually being unable to broadcast on Wednesday. I think some people might have noticed that Wednesday was actually Tuesday's show. I'll just attribute that this is, you know, it's all the Lord's hand, and we, even though we haven't really been very critical of China, and they have historically been responsible and or have, there's a direct association to when we really become critical of China, they actually kind of reach out and disrupt us. And we're easy to disrupt because the way we're dependent on communicating over the internet and so forth, denials of service are so easy to do. But, you know, you have to shake them off, kind of scrub up and reboot. Nine times out of ten, most people don't, you know, necessarily make a living out of denials of service. There are ways you can protect yourself, but in some respects, if you don't have the ability to control everything, you can't control everything. So every once in a while, you get hit with denials of service, and it's just an old ploy, a simple hacker's tool. But anyway, I want you to know that we're going to go ahead and head on into some marketing for you today. Some of you don't know, because I know we've added a lot of listeners. Marketing is where I just kind of talk about what is news, what we're doing, what we're trying to do, and some of the news. A lot of times I'll actually go through G. Edward Griffin's Need to Know News and things that you probably haven't even heard of. But there are some, you know, basic news tidbits out there that's not a part of G. Edward Griffin's Need to Know News. I didn't go through to just to kind of create a Need to Know News package. But when we get back in our next episode on Monday, we will start with the Kentucky resolutions of Virginia with Jefferson. Then we'll go to the Kentucky resolutions with Madison. And I believe we will then go through the final resolutions, or I should say the summation of resolutions, because when you go to some of the websites out there, the 1798 resolutions of Kentucky, those were not draft resolutions. What Jefferson sent to the Kentucky legislators, those were the resolutions he sent them. And so when they put a label draft on those things, that is very misrepresentative. And so when you read the final resolutions, or supposedly Jefferson kind of closing the issue later on in 1799, it's not saying that he's rewritten or there's any changes to. It is a response to the responding states, or the lack of states responding, and basically poking them in the eye and lamenting. And so this is why when you look at the whole picture of what happened in 1798, and as a matter of fact, we have a little bit of history going on right now around the world regarding the exact same things that were occurring in 1798. And some places are putting up with it and others are not. And it's interesting, just like the, as I told you a long, long time ago, when we were talking about Jefferson and Adams working together on the treaty with Britain to end the, supposedly to end the Revolutionary War, and they were in London, and they took that walk around the British lands, and they, you know, went down these roads and so forth, and they actually came to the place, the crossroads, in British history, where it's like the shot heard around the world in Concord. These were the crossroads that were, you know, infamous in the catalyst, or being the catalyst for the Glorious Revolution and the production of the British Bill of Rights. And here they were, right there at the cradle of this intersection, going, this is where our rights as Englishmen were born. And he just looked around 100 years later, and it's like people were just trodden all. I mean, it wasn't even sacred ground for them, as it was for Adams and Jefferson to go, to understand the rights of an Englishman. And they commenced at that point to lecturing the English about how they've completely lost sight of what had occurred there over a century before, and what happened, what's happened. And you could do the exact same thing here, and we're going to do the exact same thing here, but we've got kind of a special show. This weekend, we're going to be kicking off our very first of many Liberty Summits that we need to have with state legislators. And so we want you to understand that these conversations, this is what adults do. Adults have the difficult conversations to figure out what they can do, bottom line is there's a lot of adults out there that just don't know what to do. They've never seen, the methodical takedown of a government. It's a one-time thing, my friends. It only happens once. You can look throughout history, but things just don't seem to line up unless you really start looking at the macro view. This is why I tell people the Bolshevik Revolution started in America just like it started in Russia 60 years in advance. If you look in the 1860s, that's when the Bolshevik Revolution really began. And if you look at the 1960s, that's about when our revolution really began. That's where they started deliberately changing. Now, the question is, and the problem is that we, those of us who actually went through the 60s, a lot of us have woken up. It's not like we were inbred into this idea because of need, like in Russia. In Russia, the reason they had this revolution was because the Tsar just freed 22 million slaves in Russia, something that you'll never learn in our education system. The most oppressive state in the world that had the highest percentage or the highest quantity of slaves and serfs was Russia. And so they emancipated them because that was the noble thing to do. And I'm not saying maybe they should have kept them, but the Tsar, with his haste, created a problem that unleashed communism on the world. Because what did these 22 million people do? It's not like they had education. It's not like they had any resources. They had nothing. They had to come together and start living in collectivism and communalism. And, there's a really great book over here. It's called The Manifesto by Karl Marx and Engels. Marx and Engels, and they're going to teach you everything you need to. And these people started reading it. And those dangerous, maniacal people that can understand how they can take advantage started moving forward in getting the Bolshevik Revolution going. Now, at the same time, in Germany, I forget his position, but it was Otto von Bismarck who actually established socialism. He created social security, a retirement. Does this any of this sound familiar? He actually created social security in Germany and early retirements and this pathway to, the Emerald City. And they financially collapsed so badly that they ended up having to go to war and causing World War I. It was so bad that when they finished out of World War I, and they weren't the only culprits, but because they were held down so hard because of that treaty, it created a vacuum for Hitler to rise. And that's what happens. That's exactly what happens. This is why, if you look after, World War II and, the American foes that we fought, and we actually built up communist Russia. Russia continued, and there was a reason for all of this, but I don't want to get into all that history. Bottom line is, what you need to know right now, as we move forward, is this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And if you haven't listened to this show for a long time, I love getting sideways into being able to deliver that so that nobody ever sees it coming. Oh, pow, boom. Oh, anyway. This is the only show that is going to have those difficult conversations. We're the only show that's going to talk about the solution, the academic evidence of what is the real problem, and the academic evidence of what we have to do if we're going to save our Constitution and our liberties. It's really that simple, folks. And this isn't rocket science. So as we move forward in today, we're going to kind of cover what we really do here, because I think most people kind of understand, and most people get a little bit, but we just want to kind of create a real high level. If I could give you the 3-minute elevator pitch, we'll try to do that. But we also, like I said, we want to get into some marketing of what the heck's going on and where we're at. But before we do that, I've got less than 30 seconds left. There's a message that I want to start promulgating, and I can't do this alone. And as a matter of fact, the power of other people sending these messages is far greater than it just coming from the one guy that kind of spews something, right? I mean, I want you to understand this message, and this is what we have to say. Actually, I don't have time. As soon as we come back from the break, I will read this message. This has been out on my Facebook. This is actually out on our Take Action page. I will tell you where it's at, how to get it. It's an image, and we want you to start flooding social media with this. And actually, we want you to send this to your upcoming state legislators or those who are going into session this coming year. This is the message we need to send. We'll be right back after this.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my 3 C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so the message is this. And I tried to make the most succinct message I possibly can that I really wanted to impress upon our public servants, because I don't think they realize, you know, they're just going to, you know, kind of help be a part of. I don't think they realize the level of power and the magnitude of what the heck is going on and what they need to do. And so this is why we need to have these Liberty Summits. This is why we need to go through sovereignty in America as defined in the principles of our laws. Most people think that we have these, that the people, so there's a lot of people on the Patriot side that look at the people as the sovereigns, and that's kind of correct. I mean, we have the ultimate choice of who our representatives are, but we are not the sovereigns. Our government does not make us the sovereigns. If that is so, if you subscribe that the people are the sovereigns, God is the ultimate sovereign, and then the people are sovereigns, then you do not understand our government, because our government is a Republican form of government, not a democracy. When the people are the sovereigns, then you have a democracy. And so all things must go through the people. Instead, we have a hybrid constitutional republic. A hybrid constitutional republic means that you have a, and when I say hybrid, we have a very intricate level of republicanism. We have counties that created states, and or states that were created, and then counties were developed as the state grew. And each county was fundamentally a sub-element of government, where the majority of the powers to help the people, to guide or to not necessarily control, but to serve the people at the lowest level is the county. Now you have cities and so forth that create their own levels of services and so forth. But you got to remember, public service is public service, not public mastery. And so counties are it's like the building block of society is the family. So in government, the building block of our hybrid constitutional republic is the county. And the county makes up the states. And so in relationship to the national government at the state level, counties are like states. Counties have sovereigns, and those sovereigns have control over how they want to govern the roads and as many possible things as possible. Our system was designed not to allow roles, responsibilities, and powers to be collected and centralized into a centralized power. As Jefferson referred to our makeup and system, we were a distributive power system where the power was projected, or actually it was distributed out or delegated out to where the power could be closest to the people. So when we start looking at our states, we can actually start realizing that that's not what's going on, that the states have become the centralized power, and they've become a big part of the problem because they want to control everything. And oh, guess what? Those who control the population centers are those people and paradigms of the population centers take control of the state. This is why Las Vegas completely controls Nevada and Nevada politics. Chicago controls all of Illinois. And all those people who live in the farmland are suffering. It's only common sense to know that those out in the farmland in the non-city area are suffering to the extent that they will take. This is why so many farmlands are being abandoned, because in Chicago, they're making more than enough money off of the city, off of commerce, and the other things. Now, Iowa might be a little bit different. Nebraska might be a little bit different. But as more money goes into the population centers, the need to make money off of food goes down. This is why we've allowed this corporate farming and dismantled, practically, or supported the dismantling of family farming. This is repugnant. And we should have never allowed this to happen. And the reason we did is because states became perverted. And I believe it was Reynolds v. Sims, where the Supreme Court basically said that apportionment must be by the population instead of by the Republican form of government, or the structure of the government and government sovereigns. Therefore, counties were leveled, and what we ended up creating is legislative districts based on population. There was a reason why counties were represented in the Senate and not a legislative district, because counties' interests are different, just like the state's interests are different. And let's look at the United States and how the sub-element of government within the United States isn't the county, it is the states. Now, are the desires and interests and resources that are most precious to the people in Idaho the same as those people in Florida? Absolutely not. Now, at that scale, you can start understanding that some places thrive on, you know, what do you call that, tourism. Some places thrive on forestry. Some places thrive on minerals. Every state has its own disparate resources, interests, and abilities. And when all of a sudden you start marginalizing the disparate interests and allow the few population centers, which is the where we're going with the democracy, California, Texas, Florida, New York, maybe New Jersey, those few states which control what they call the apportionment of people, will control this nation. I want to tell you that that concept was rejected in the Constitutional Convention. When Madison presented the Virginia Plan, and he basically said, well, why can't we just do apportionment by the people? The states said, we don't trust you big states. And it was Delaware that actually said this. They knew exactly what would happen, that the desires of those more populated states would work together and they would change life as everybody knew it if they allowed that to go. This is why they created this new concept of American republicanism. And I go into this, but that concept is very simple. That in America, we aren't the representatives of the people in a republican form of government. We're a representatives of sovereigns in a representative government. Therefore, in our hybrid constitutional republic, we actually delegate powers to very specific governments. The federal government has very specific delegated powers. We go through that all the time here. The states also have delegated powers, and the counties were to have delegated powers, and guess what? They were supposed to have most of them. They were supposed to have the most say over the powers that affected the people and their everyday lives. And what has ended up happening, because nobody understood sovereignty and thinking, oh, only the people are sovereigns. No, that's a democracy, and that's how we move into this perverted state. If we're to protect the minorities, and when I say the minorities, those living in the vastly, the less populated state, those who have the least amount of population, we need to protect their interest as equal to those in the most populated. Yeah, in Phoenix, Arizona, they need water and they're going to do whatever, because I'm telling you right now, Arizona is growing. I think Phoenix, Arizona is the hotbed of travel, and more people are moving there. It's going to become probably the fifth largest state in the next 10 to 15 years. That's how much growth it is, and that's, I mean, its climate is changing. You actually are starting to see humidity in Arizona, just like you never saw humidity in the high desert, in the Inland Empire in California. And when we got there in the early 90s, there was just no humidity at all. By the time we left there in the 2010s, 2015, that time frame, the five last summers we had there were hot and humid because everybody had lawns and they started injecting that water stuff all around them. And so next thing you know, there's just this presence of water. Well, what is humidity? It's water becoming vapors into your environment. Anyway, I don't want to go on and on and on, but here is the message that we need to get out, and I've got 1 minute to say this. As we write, quote, this goes to all elected public servants, as we write the history of this current decade into the annals of our republic's history, how will you be remembered? will your name be recorded as one who supported the demise of our liberty and our Constitution, or one who did nothing? Or will you be one of those who ardently fought to save our liberty and our Constitution? We, the people, are watching. And we want them to know that we're watching, and we want them to know what we want them to do is to protect our liberty and save our Constitution. How much more clear can that message be? So you can find this meme on reclaimingtherepublic.org. Go to the Take Action page. I have a few different memes there. And as a matter of fact, if you come up with a great meme, we'll be happy to put it there. And we'll even put your name, credit, or what have you. If you want to help, we've got to start getting the message very succinct and concise, just like this. But anyway, we do have some marketing as well that we want to get into. But that last segment was really more about sovereignty, bicameral legislation, and we'll be right back.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, my friends, so we're in a political fight. And as I always say, we're fighting an enemy that is the most maniacal. And unless you realize who we're fighting, then you will never be able to place context of how to fight, where to fight, what we need to do, and so forth. I am telling you that we are in a fight with Satan. I don't care how you want to label this enemy. I call him Satan. You can call him the global progressives, the elitists, the progressives, the communists. I don't care. Whoever you see as the enemy here, who wants to subjugate the world, who wants to rule us and actually take away all of our rights and liberties, our inalienable rights, because they now have the technology, the weaponry, the tools necessary to make us chattel. I want to be clear. They have what they need to control us. Now, those of us who refuse to go will probably be killed, because you must understand the ends justify the means as far as they're concerned. That's how they think. The ends justify the means. They will do whatever is necessary to succeed. period. So, in this global fight, in this fight here at home, as we're fighting Satan, we must be cognizant of who he is and where he is. He has ensconced himself within the government, not within the Constitution, but within the government. This is why every time states step into the court system will eat them up. Whenever you go to a court that has no jurisdiction, this is why I will just tell you that this lawsuit that Texas is doing, we're just going to take a quick aside, this lawsuit that Texas is doing is a good issue, and the problem is, what are the judges? Now, we actually may have a favorable, but I have no faith in the Supreme Court, period. I have no faith in anybody that is in the halls of the government of Washington, D.C., or the bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. Obama was right about one thing. You cannot change D.C. from within. And even though Trump was able to get quasi, or what some people want to tell me are good constitutional jurists, onto the Supreme Court and onto the other courts and in the other court systems, I don't believe so. Because I've yet to hear any of these people say, oh, well, you know, this is an issue we have no jurisdiction on. Because almost everything that they have in front of them, they have no jurisdiction on. When it comes to education, when it comes to marriage, when it comes to anything, energy, they have no jurisdiction on these things. Those are not enumerated powers. This is how far out the paradigm has crept. And I am here to tell you that we must destroy this paradigm. We must wake people up to the concept of an enumerated constitution and so forth. So where is the battlefield? The battlefield is in your state legislators. These are the people that must actually do the work. They have the biggest row to hoe, there's the term. They have the bulk of the work. Every sovereign, every county commissioner, every city council member, everybody who takes an oath of office must be clamoring a very clear and concise message. We must comply to the Constitution. We must demand your compliance, our superior, you know, our next step up, right? I mean, the county commissioner, who would they be going to? They should be going to the state legislators, demanding that they comply and call for republic review and demand the federal government be put back into the framework of the Constitution. And we should, it's a trickle-up effect. We have to demand it from our local leaders, which then demand it, you know, and actually, if you think about it, your legislators are your local leaders because they're coming from your community. It's just that they reside in the next district up in government, the first district being your county. See, most people understand the chain of command, you know, the president and then the people. No, that's not it. And it's not it at all. It's the legislators. That's why in the ratification debates, they referred to those who were legislators, lawmakers, as sovereigns. That's what I'm saying. The paradigm back then was a lot different. So why is it that there are two bodies of legislatures if we only represent the people? See, that whole concept of representing sovereigns has been lost. The people are sovereigns and the sub-element of government, the county commissioners. So what we need to do is we need to start restoring some of the state government, but we can't make that our focus because right now, if Washington, D.C. and the Biden administration is successful in stealing this election, they are going to do everything they can to shred and rip away. And as a matter of fact, I honestly think that they're going to come out and be honest and say, folks, let's be honest, we're really not following the Constitution, but we're doing such a good job. We're just going to put this aside as a relic, as a historical document, but we're going to continue doing those things that the Constitution gives us power to do, all things necessary, and we are the supreme law of the land. They have perverted these concepts to such a point that they now believe that they are the ultimate sovereigns over all things. And this is where it gets nasty. And this is why we must demand that our state legislatures are, one, prepared for this, and two, they know how to strike. We have, and everybody that's listened to this has kind of gone through the few things and the many things that need to be done as we start pulling together the concept, this beautiful God-given concept, the Constitution and compliance. That's all they've got to do. It's required. It's Article 6 in the Constitution demands that every public servant take an oath of office. Section 3 requires that they take that oath to support the Constitution, not the president, not the party leader, not the whip, not the speaker, the president pro tem, the Constitution. Every public servant's responsibility in patriotism in America, it's defined unlike anywhere else in the world, and nobody even understands this. Well, a patriot supports the country. No, no. We are to support the Constitution, because when you move it or migrate it to a paradigm of the country, well, that means the government. That could be the president. That could be anything. No, it's very specific in America. It is the Constitution. And so as we move forward in fighting this fight, we have to recognize that going into court is a fool's game. Now, with these trials, there is a good shot. I honestly believe that the states that are getting involved in the Texas debate need to bring to the table that the Constitution in this election and all previous elections has not been complied to. Anybody and everybody that has listened to me rail about our electoral process and the Electoral College, we have failed. And as a matter of fact, even the state legislatures have no idea how they have been duped into following the maniacal planning and the nefarious regulations that the party and the federal government has created, and they have created in creating this mess. We are to elect electors. There is nowhere in the Constitution, in Article 2, in the 12th Amendment, in the 20th Amendment, there is nowhere where we're to have a primary or where to we're to elect or vote for the president. It clearly states that we are to choose our electors, and then the electors are to gather and cast votes for the president and the vice president. It's pretty simple. But they've confused us into this whole popular vote democracy concept. So this is why, and I'm answering a very specific question. I told them I would answer this question here on this show today, that the states need to bring to the table that we have not even followed the constitutional process, and that this whole election is fraudulent and a direct violation of the Constitution. Just because we've done it wrong and we've been violating the Constitution for over a century, there is nothing in that document that says we are obligated to continue to violate this Constitution. And as a state, we demand to correct this outrage, this egregious violation that has led us down this path to our own potential ruin. Do you understand now? Do you understand the beauty within this thing we have is the Constitution? Because every state legislator and legislative body, one of the things that they need to do this coming session is not only get this legislation for Republic review, to redo their election laws and demanding that the people choose an elector, that people actually file, that are qualified to be elector per the Constitution, and they run for their congressional district. The only thing the state legislatures are to choose is the manner of the choosing. What does that mean? People don't even understand this. Every congressional district has a representative. We'll have to get back to this. I am so sorry. We're going into our last segment, and I haven't even come close to the marketing. So forgive me, please. I'm probably a part of the problem because I just keep on going into too many details. And in the last segment, I actually bled into the promo. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so each state is allocated two types of electors. One type of elector are for their senators. Now, at that point in time, the electors represented those electors for the Senate actually represented the senators in the Senate, and therefore the people that elected the senators at that point were the state legislators. And so technically the senators could actually elect their own electors, but they had to be different. It's clear in the Constitution who an elector is. They are held to the same standards, but they cannot hold any other office. And if you look at the process, every year or every 2 years, every 4 years for the presidential election, at a minimum every 4 years, electors were elected, and then they would go out and they would listen to the people, they would listen to the candidates, they would look at the issues, and they would be the ones who chose. And 9 times out of 10, in the very beginning, the electors were actually up front, because everybody knew everybody. It wasn't like at the very beginning, hey, everybody's a mystery. Who's this James Madison, and who's this John Adams? You know, we don't know these guys. Are you kidding? They just fought a revolution. These people wrote papers. Everybody knew who each other were. And that's why at the ratification debates, the who's who of politics was there. They were in all the rooms. My friends, these people, these electors who were sought office, who sought the opportunity to represent the people, actually campaigned on who and how they would vote. Some of them directly committed to voting for Madison. Some of them directly committed to voting for another. But this is how we were to choose the president. You got to understand that the electors only go and they certify their vote for their representation. Now, the state legislators are to choose the manner in how to choose. So if the state legislators now, because the senators are voted under a general election, they could actually choose to say this portion, because let's be honest, you could have a state that's literally divided to say, okay, we have an East Coast and a West Coast, or a West Side, like in Washington State, and say, we want this half of the people to choose their own elector, and the other half of the state can have their elector. And in so doing, what we now have is we have the closest model to a representative government. If the state legislatures say, well, we want to have a general election for our two electors that represent the state or our Senate, then okay, because technically that's what the senators do. But if they say that, you know, we're going to go based on the party and allow winner take all, then what they have done is they've actually created a democracy and not a representative government, and they have taken the voice of the people of each of the congressional districts that are allocated one elector. So the state legislators are only supposed to choose the manner in how the people choose their electors. They have no, that's a capital N and a capital O. State legislators have no constitutional authority to dictate the outcome. Show me in Article 2, the 12th Amendment, or the 20th Amendment where the state legislators can dictate the outcome. They have the manner in the choosing of electors. They only control that, my friends. And that's why this just absolutely baffles people when they don't even understand these things, because they just don't even want to take the time to read it and figure it out. State legislators do have a lot of power, but in a Republican form of government, their hands are tied. And it is repugnant to think that the state legislators could allow a state to move into a democracy to say, you know what, if the party that wins the presidential election gets to choose who the electors are, why, we're going to let the party actually choose who your representatives are as well. I mean, it's the same thing, right? Your elector is your representative, and it's the same thing as your House of Representatives. That is how repugnant this concept is. Winner take all, my eye. This is all about control and how the party has worked together in allowing this controlling mechanism. And this whole thing was co-opted and is created. Even though we were divided, the globalists, the people with money, came and infiltrated America, and they created a uniparty. And the party that was to win was the Communist Party. Oh, but at that point in time, they didn't call them the Communist Party. For the longest time, the Communist Party was called the Labor Party throughout the world. Only in America do we call the Labor Party the Democratic Party. Interesting. Interesting, is it, my friends? Now, so the Democratic Party used to be the Communist Party, and it still really is, but the Republican Party has been co-opted. It is basically, as Trump has said, anybody that understands the party system, it is the problem. And this is why I've aligned with the Constitution Party, and I would ask that every state legislator literally consider a bi-party position. I mean, don't abandon your constituents who claim to be Republicans until you teach them that they need to be constitutionalist. And we need to slowly, like I just said in our previous episode, we need to turn this red and blue nation into parchment. And as we unite on the Constitution, this is exactly how we're going to do it. I mean, I'm not a prophet. I'm not a foreseer or anything. This is all based on history, how we can do this and how we can actually overcome the even scientists use history to understand what's going to happen. So anyway, if you want to know the direction we're going, you have to look at where we've been and how things have progressed. But unless you start knowing what to look for and recognizing it, we're all going to miss it. And this is how societies get duped and how they get destroyed. I want you to understand as we basically, you know, move forward here, because I don't have hardly any time. Vaccines are coming, and the state legislators need to protect us in this. They need to actually clearly assert that no sovereign citizen in their state will be able to be mandated. No entity, any entity that violates their constitutional rights will be arrested. So if the feds or in a bureaucracy tries to come in, then they are protected. One of the things I need to also point out, and I really don't have all the time, but I hope to get this into the state legislators' minds, we have to go after the tech companies. States have been crippled without making the revenue of all the money the tech companies have been sucking out of their state. No state is gathering the taxes and revenues that they deserve off of Google, off of Facebook, off of YouTube, off of all of these tech companies that are making billions of dollars, where every time you make a click, they've made money. This has to end. This year, we go after the tech companies and we fine them for failing to report revenue and paying their share of taxes. Yeah, it's going to be cumbersome, and boy, are the tech companies going to... Hey, look at France. They just got hit with 100, I think it was Google or Facebook, some tech company just got hit with $100-some-odd million fee or fine because they haven't been paying or reporting and so forth. Disney is one of the evil media moguls, and Lucas is now basically telling people how painful it was to have to sell Lucasfilms to Disney. They are collectivizing all their powers. And I'm here to tell you, my friends, we have a problem. And oh, by the way, this trust buster, this antitrust and this crap that the federal government unconstitutionally assumed back in the late 1800s, the states need to take that power back. We'll work through this session and the next session of exactly how the states can do all of these great things for us. I want you to also understand that the hyperbolic rhetoric is about to explode exponentially regarding COVID. How many people are dying? You know, Trump, you got to give him credit. He eradicated the virus, or I should say influenza, because the world, and nobody's really reporting, everything is associated to COVID now. And I just want you, I'm just trying to go through some of these things. I want you to understand, when you start looking at Biden's pick, it really reminds me of this song that The Who did a long, long time ago. And if you really understand the lyrics, or I should say the meaning to this music in the background, and what he says coming out of this yell, what he basically says is, meet the new boss. Same as the old boss. And that's what the globalists have been doing. The globalists have been making sure that they've got the guy in their control that actually is going to do the job in moving us lemmings down their path. Now, as we move away and break away from the DC news cycle fixation and actually start realizing that history is being made in every state house, be ye prepared, my friends, that this has to be the year. This has to be the year the message gets started. This has to be the year where we start making the progress against evil. I mean, the message hasn't changed. This is not, I repeat, this is not an Article 5 convention pulling the states together to amend the Constitution. This is the assertion of the state's authority over the Constitution to demand full compliance and enforce their Constitution. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. And in our next episode, we will be getting into those resolutions. God bless. Have a great weekend.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.